Hello again and welcome to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Simon, we've knocked it off again, haven't we? Just look to your left hand side. There's a bronzed Adonis sitting next to you on your left hand side. Clearly been on the golf course. He's been living it up.
Yes.
It's a former Wolves, Sunderland, Falkirk, Millwall, Dundee and Glasgow Rangers man. Alec Ray, good to have you on with us, Alec.
Thanks, Mark. It was a lovely introduction. The tan man.
Yeah, looking good.
No, listen. Yes, he's looking well, isn't he?
Jason Statham. Actually, looking well again. I can see the way you've pitched him.
He's came in his skateboard, Squeegee. You remind me of Niall Quinn. His trousers are 6 inches too short.
Niall Quinn.
But anyway, listen. We're going to be with you for 45 minutes. We've got some great topics. We can't go over 45 minutes a day because Alec wants to get back to Duke Street to that tanning salon. His £2 token runs out at 12:30, so just so he can get back in and get the last 10 minutes, we'll be fine. But we've got some great topics for you guys to listen into with us today. We're going to speak about Stoke's relegation, Scottish manager Paul Lambert, some of the players, particularly the England goalkeeper Jack Butland, has been critical of the recruitment. We'll speak about Willow Flood, his red card last night in the game between Dundee United and Livingston. We'll speak about Rangers, the investment, the share issue that's going to be launched by the club, and Dave King has announced that. What kind of impact that's going to have for new boss Steven Gerrard? And then we'll speak about relegation celebrations. When you avoid the drop, should you celebrate? Dundee boss Neil McCann said that he didn't want his players to celebrate after getting the result that keeps them in the Scottish Premiership. So lots coming up. We'll get right in about it. Simon, Stoke down, Paul Lambert. It's always sad to see a Scottish boss go down from the top flight because there's not many in there anymore.
It is, and I feel for Paul Lambert. I read Jack Butland's bit and he was full of praise for Paul Lambert, saying that the dressing room he went in and was toxic. It's not easy going in with these big names down the bottom of the league. I mean, I think Jack Butland was saying some of them didn't even want to train, didn't know where some of them were. Mm-hmm. I mean, the wee boy Berahino's heavy, isn't he? He doesn't know if he's trying to diet or dying to try it, but
you've been rehearsing that, haven't you?
Yes, got it in. But no, I feel sorry for. I think he's done a good job. Every game I've watched Stoke, they've played well. They've nobody to stick the ball in the net. Big Crouch is getting on now, and I really do feel for Lambert. I thought he'd keep them up, but wasn't it a beef for him?
Looks like he's going to keep his job, though. Alec, he's putting plans in place for next season.
Mark, it's interesting. I read an article this morning that says it may well be down to the club or the manager who can actually put in a exit strategy either way. So it's not as clear cut as you say there, I think. So they'll have to review it over the coming days. I think one of the key things that Simon touched upon there is that there seems to be a decent dressing room in terms of the environment. We've seen some of the celebrations when the Stoke players have scored. You know, they're quite keen on Paul. They were over celebrating with him. That's always a good indication, I says. But Charlie Adams came out today and slaughtered four or five guys. Didn't mention him. I think he did it on TalkSport last night or someone like that. And so I'm always sceptical of that one when people come out after the event. Yeah. You know, I think people have to look at themselves.
I think as well, sorry to interrupt, I think as well, if you're going to do that in any circumstance, whether you're Charlie Adams at Stoke or any player at any other club, if you're going to do that, you need to go the whole hog and name names. Yeah. Otherwise, you're casting aspersions over the whole dressing room. And that's not fair. If you're going to, you either say nothing or you say the full thing.
No, listen, that's my point, you know. And I also feel as if it'd be more important to actually front them where they've got something they can possibly change it. Yeah. So see if you come out and go, listen, Simon Ferry's no pulling his weight and da-da-da. It might cause friction. Does that say quite a bit? Is on but, you know, I think it's important to part of the modern-day footballer, I'm not referring this to Charlie, but the thing is, they're always looking to pass the buck. You know, I think recruitment at Stoke's been poor. They get rid of Arnautovic to West Ham, which was a key one because he was a match winner.
Yeah.
And if you don't bring a similar type player who can actually make that difference, then it becomes very difficult because you're letting quality go to your rivals who it looks as if West Ham's going to stay up now. So unless you can replace them, then it becomes extremely difficult.
The recruitment has been terrible, hasn't it? I mean, the wee boy, but I've scored more goals in 3 years than wee boy Berahino. That's who they signed for, what, 20 million quid?
But it was a strange one, wasn't it? Because you knew that Tony Pulis couldn't wait to get
rid of him. I know.
And they still were getting, I think they get at least 20 million from him, don't they?
And the boy, is it Hesse as well they brought in for, was it PSG?
Yeah, there's been a few. And I think, you know, at the start of the season, when you looked at the squads, Stoke had probably the most Champions League winners. In their squad, in terms of boys that have operated at
a club like Stoke, I don't think they should be signing Champions League winners, because if you're a Champions League winner and you're any good, you're going to Man United or Man City. Mm-hmm. These are guys that
fighting club.
By the way, get boys that have got a point to prove, didn't
you? One of the most intimidating crowds when they're at it is Stoke. It's lethal. You know, you think, oh, here we go, and it's clearly been missing of late as well. So when you're missing that, they want, and Simon's right, they want to actually try and identify teams, you know, players that are getting in people's faces, and you've got that momentum, so you've got the crowd at it, you've got the players at it. But if you're signing guys, I think they've paid 18 million quid for a player, and he hasn't been spotted in the last 2 years as well, you know, he hasn't featured, so his name escapes me. I read it this morning as well, but he's clearly made that much of an impact, I can't even remember his name, so, but it just shows you, you know, that these marquee signings can make or break you.
So for Paul, moving forward, I think Paul will stay on. I think there's assurances there that they're going to have a crack at it for next season, and I hope that's the case, to get straight back up. How conscientious will he be that he knows that he needs to get it spot on moving forward with the recruitment? Because you can't afford, you know, to have any, you know, characters in there that basically having to get the good of the club or the manager or their teammates at heart.
Mark, you've got to identify the ones that are actually going to make a contribution. You get the ones that are kind of energy sappers as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been in a dressing room where you're looking at guys and they're no contributing nothing. You know they're on a fortune, and you're just thinking to yourself, we need to get these guys out of there. And Paul will know who they are. Mm-hmm. But one of the hardest things that Paul will find is trying to get these guys other clubs, because they'll be on fortunes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to pay them off. You have to try and supplement their wages, and it ends up becoming a bit of a nightmare. And that's the hardest challenge for Paul, because he will have targets that will probably be fitting into his way of thinking, trying to get Stoke back up next year.
For, in terms of your playing career and your management career, have you had can you remember a case where there's been one or two and you think, either A, as a manager, I need to get them out of here quickly, or as a teammate, I hope the manager can get shot of these guys?
Oh no, there's been plenty of them. When I was up at Dundee, part of my first remit was to get rid of five or six players. I would have liked to have kept the players, but because of the financial restraints, mm-hmm. the budget had halved when I first went up there. So it was guys like Lee Wilkie, Brady, Tam McManus. So you know they were on a fortune. They were, mm-hmm. they were on substantial money. In fact, some of them were on four times the money that I was told was my ceiling. So you know, and you're trying to manage these guys and go, listen, I'm only in the door. This is just part of my remit. So you have to try and get them out the door, but you have to do it in a manner that it's not going to be toxic, because these guys are in the dressing room, they're key players, they're influential. So there's there, and then there's been times when you've been in a dressing room and guys, you know, guys are picking up a fortune, and that was a kind of downfall at Sunderland. Guys like myself were kind of playing weekend 30 odd games in the Premiership a season, and they were bringing in these marquee players, a couple of foreign guys.
Such as?
Well, we signed a guy, Carsten Fredgaard, for 1.8 million, who was like the new big thing coming out of Denmark. He was a flying machine. And then we signed a wee centre forward. He was about 5'2" to replace Niall Quinn. No, I'm serious. We've been paid about 1.5 million for a fella called Milton Nunes. And he was 5'2". And when we came in for pre-season, we thought he was a mascot. We were saying, how you doing, right? And so much so that he reminded us of a wee guy out of Fantasy Island, Tattoo. Hey, boss, there's a plane. So, he never played a game, Mark. But he was on probably two or three times what I was earning. So there's that friction between there. But it's paramount that you get it right, because it can unsettle a dressing room. Mm-hmm.
Simon, you must have been in dressing rooms over your career where there's been one or two bad apples.
Bad apples, I don't know, but we finished third in League One, got beaten to play a final for Millwall. Great dressing room, the best dressing room I've ever been in. We'd be out all the
Swindon.
Time. Swindon. And in the summer we got rid of, I think we lost Billy Painter, who was a great guy in the dressing room, striker.
Centre forward,
big scouser, lovely guy. And we brought in David Prutton and Vincent Pericard. And I think Prutton had played in the Premier League most of his life. He's obviously doing Sky now, but just wasn't suited to a dressing room. And the dressing room ended up getting split. He knew guys that were there before. Jonathan Douglas were Leeds guys, stuff like that. The good guys, but when Prutz came in, it just the whole dressing room just split. And it happened as soon as 2 weeks in. Yeah. And 2 weeks in, I could sense this is not right.
And was it something do you think he was deliberately engineering, or was it just by
personality?
Accident?
He was having himself Prutz. Right. He thought he was too good to be at Swindon, I felt. Whereas we all loved it at Swindon. We thought, well, this is right for us, right level, we're playing it, we're all pals. But he just came in and he was slagging the club. Oh, look at what's this lunch, stuff like that. And the Leeds boys would straight away jump on it with him, and then it'd be 5 or 6 in the morning about lunch, whereas the year before it wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
A big Vincent Pericard.
Was he at Portsmouth?
The big man
well,
never man? Ran any further than fucking to here to me to you. The time at Swindon, mate, honestly, the big man was not bothered. As you say, yeah, he was at Stoke as well. So it's a common theme, but big man didn't try a leggy full time he was there. And the boys, he again, as Alex said, was on a fortune at us. And boys were raging about that.
Big Pericard was on the phone at me this morning and says, you didn't recover for getting slapped at Millwall. That was it.
He wouldn't have been standing behind us anyway, I'll tell you that, the big man.
So, moving forward, just to finish off on Stoke, you hope that Paul stays on, and because he's got great championship experience. Well, he knows what it takes to get out of that division, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, listen, he did it with Norwich. Yep. He bounced up a couple of divisions for League One, and then he did it the following year with it's an extremely difficult league, Mark, and you have to say that with the money that Stoke are going to be paying players next year, they will be one of the big fish. They'll probably have one of the biggest budgets. So you then become one of the scalps.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the greatest respect, there's teams down the pecking order that don't have, the resources, and they will become the ones that everybody wants to turn over. It's just part and parcel.
You look what happened to your old club, Sunderland. I mean, I know they very quickly became bottom
prime
six,
example.
Right away at the start, and if you don't get off to your seat, you think, whoa, rather than looking to try and give up, you're actually getting sucked into going down. And you think about it, I don't want to get off script of it, but when you look at Sunderland actually now in League One, it's incredible.
It happened at Wolves as well, Simon, a couple of years ago. They've done back-to-back relegations, it's because the expectations, they guys like Big Johnson and O'Hara and all these guys, Ethan Blake, and so the guys that were kind of well-known to that level, Premiership, and then all of a sudden you get caught in that mire. And I know what happens, because everybody just looks at each other and goes, that's not my fault, it's your fault. Just the modern day, and you don't have that environment in which Paul's going to need to bounce back up next year.
Well, we certainly wish Paul Lambert all the best from everybody at Open Goal. We hope that he stays on and gets Stoke right back up into the Premiership again. So, okay, we'll move on to the Dundee United v Livingston game, 3-2 to Livingston. First leg league and the chance to play the team that finishes 11th in the Premiership. We'll start right away with the Willow Flood incident, the red card. I mean, the wee man's just lost it.
He's got that in him, though, Willow. He came to Celtic with me when I was obviously in the reserves, but Willow was quite often in the reserves as well. he was a good player. He's a good player, though, Willow. He's neat and tidy, but even in training, if he lost it, well, and he could boot people, and it wouldn't matter who it was, McGeady's, stuff like that in training. If Willow lost his head, you knew about it. I mean, there's not much to him, but he can go, Willow. I can imagine him being a wee scrapper, but I thought terrible for an experienced player to go into that. What were the 2-1 up at the time? 2-2 was it, maybe? The game was close, and for him to go and do that, after, I don't think he's had the best of seasons. To go and do that to his team, one of your experienced players, I mean, if you're Shaba, Laszlo, you're absolutely raging, aren't you?
Yeah, well, listen, I've been in similar things myself where I've actually just lost. The pressure's actually got to him at that time. He's got sucked in. You know, we talk about game management and players just using that little bit of an edge, and he's actually clearly got sucked in. And it's interesting because I had Andy McLaren, who was great for us up at Dundee, and he had a similar one, and we were going for the promotion, and he got sucked in, Andy, and he got somebody's just kind of gave him a few bits of verbal, so he's got a red card, and then the next guys came and just gave him a wee nip on the side of the arm, and then Andy's went to Letterham and all, got another yellow.
Was that a Clyde? He was telling
Clyde, aye, so he ended up getting another red card, and then when he went off, I think he gave the fourth official a bit of a volley as well.
Put the referee's door in or something?
Listen, I think it was three red cards.
What do you see as a manager? What do you say to an older guy like that when he does that?
He just turned around and go, thanks, but it's been nice knowing you. No, but listen, going back to Willow. he will be absolutely devastated. You know, because the thing is, he'll be sat in that dressing room, he'll know that he's let everyone down. He'll see the I think in one of some of the papers this morning, there was footage of him having a go at the BT cameras as well. You just can't do it. And more importantly, Friday night's return leg, he's suspended. So he'll be sitting there going, this may well be the end of my time at Dundee United. It's ended so badly. And the whole thing, he's just got caught up in the whole emotion of it, and he's let himself down and everyone else. And but that's the thing, you know, you've got to box clever as a football player. You know, the Livy boys just dug in. At one point, I thought they were going to get overrun. You know, when they were 2-1 down, I thought, oh, this could be anything. The start of the second half, Dundee United, they just stuck to their task, and it makes a return leg on Friday. Poof, that doesn't half look.
I mean, even though Livy have got the 3-2 advantage, but just exactly what you're saying there, if they know that they can get a reaction with the mind games and a wee bit of naughtiness on the pitch here and there, they'll use that to their advantage as well, won't they?
Well, listen, see, when you're in the tunnel, I'd be using all sorts of verbals. Yeah. You know, just because you know within a lineup who the weaker ones are, you'd be going, you're getting it, and you know.
Why are you looking at me when you're saying that?
Well, that's what exactly. I had that doing my pocket before we even got all the lines on. But one of the things that kind of struck me by the game last night was that Dundee United were really all over the place at the back. They were at sixes and sevens. And it looks as if Moshney's pulled his groin. So if he's pulled his groin as well, and I have to say, it might be a blessing to Skies, because his recovery for the second goal and the third goal were poor. He looked as if he was all over the place at times last night. So, but then who do you turn to for Dundee United? But they're still very much in the tie.
Livy can't do that to you, though. Played them last year, most of the same boys that are still there, and they're constantly on you all the time. They didn't get you a minute on the ball. I think we were beating them a couple of times, 1-0, 2-0, and they came back and beat us 3-2. They're just relentless, and I think the manager's got them playing like that. Horrible team to play against. And I cannot see Dundee United going there and winning on Friday.
He's right when he says that stems for the management team. Oh, aye, absolutely, because he gets into your mind, you just get right in among it, never die attitude. And whereas I look at the Dundee United and I see a team that are kind of powder puffing a lot of respects. Yeah, well, that's a better word than powder puff, well said, Biggin. But I think that's a fair comment. You know, you look at them, and when they were under the cosh, they make bad decisions at round time, trying to play out for the back twice, and get, you know, within a space of 3 minutes. Yeah. And again, it goes back to that leadership thing. You're just people to drag them, put your foot with communication on the park. And unfortunately, they never done that. And but I have to say, these playoffs in recent years have been absolutely brilliant.
They've had everything. They're really good.
The split, the playoffs, I mean, listen, we find plenty of things to moan about in Scottish football, and we'll never have a perfect product, it's impossible, but a lot of great things. When you look at what's coming up this weekend, the relegation issue, the fight for second place, you've got playoffs down below, Simon's involved in the playoffs with Peterhead as well. You think, you know what, for our own wee game, we should talk it up more, because there's a lot of good about it.
And the games are exciting, by the way. See the game last night, maybe no great quality, but it's exciting. And I watch the games down south, and it bores me to tears sometimes, honestly. And I want to say, see the wee boy Pittman that scored the third for Livingston.
Great finish.
Good player, by the way.
Aye.
I tweeted last night, it was like marking a fucking racehorse playing against him.
Aye.
He's so fit, the boy, and he can play as well. So I think he's got a good chance, Pittman.
He's he can kick one?
I think he could kick one. I think he could play in the Premier League.
Aye?
No, the English Premier League.
No, no, I get you.
I think he could. If Livingston didn't go up, I think he could get
move
a wee move.
The thing is, if his agent's putting out DVD footage of him in action, that's
you want the game that he played me, mate.
Show him scooting away for Simon. Imagine scoring like this. I mean, anybody can do that.
You could at least go to
League 2. You get guys at the pub to do that.
You could at least go to League 2 in England.
So we'll see what happens. That will be an interesting game on Friday night, and of course we'll find out on Saturday whether Livingston or Dundee United who they will play. It's either going to be Partick Thistle or Hamilton or Ross County, depending on how things go this midweek. And of course on Saturday, so I just want to keep an eye on. We're now going to speak about Rangers on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. I'm Mark Guidi, joined by our own Simon Ferry, and our special guest is Jason Alec Ray, who's joined us in. Right, Al, Rangers, we're on it. Stephen Gerrard, he's been appointed. Dave King's out yesterday saying there's going to be £6 million of investment coming in with a share issue that should get launched next week. First of all, what do you think about that kind of money, if that's the kind of level of net that Steven Gerrard's going to, considering that Cassinho must have been in and around the 10 million mark this time last year?
Well, listen, first and foremost, I didn't I actually thought it would be more the investment. The share issue will take care of itself, uh-huh. and it obviously can only put out so many shares, Mark, so that yeah. would probably be in the ceiling in which they could have achieved.
Could do, yeah.
So they'll try and put that through. I'm led to believe that's going to be done and dusted by the end of June, right. was the money's coming in for that. That was my information, hopefully it's correct. So you've got £6 million. There was rumours going round about Glasgow that there was going to be a substantial, yourself and I had mm-hmm. spoke about this last week,
yep.
and that it was possibly going to be 25, 30. There was a lot of figures been bandied about that it was actually going to be substantial, which would allow Steven Gerrard to go and give major surgery to the squad, much needed surgery to the squad.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of blown out in the water yesterday. I'm actually pleased because it puts a bit of clarity on it rather than all these rumours going about that, you know, there's going to be zillions coming in and it's going to be... within the actual statement yesterday, he said that Mark Allen and Steven Gerrard would assess the current squad. They would assess whether they wanted to keep, who they wanted to punt. And then they would have a list of players and what they felt as if there was going to be targets that they could potentially bring in to complement the ones that he wants to keep. So that's my understanding of the whole thing. Having read some of the comments again this morning from Dave King, I was blown away with some of the stuff he actually had to say. He was talking about that Graham Murty was always going to be the interim manager. If he pulled up trees, he may well have been in a position to put himself forward for the managers there. So it didn't look as if he was going to be a relevant or a serious contender going forward. And if you take that into consideration, if you got read on to the next paragraph, he says that Graham Murty got the total say-so whether they took £11 million for Morelos or not, having said that he was not going to be the permanent manager. Now, as an example, 2004-05 season, we brought Boomsong in for nothing mm-hmm. from France and sold him in January for £8 million. Mm-hmm. Everybody, and by anybody, was going, this is a remarkable piece of business. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 months, you're making an £8 million profit. Fast forward to the current day, and potentially you could have bought a guy for £1 million and sold him for £11 million, and yet you're giving the guy the final say, if this is true, mm-hmm. if you gave him the final say of £11 million transfer, mm-hmm. I find it absolutely astonishing that they would give it to that great...
Absolutely. Another thing as well that gets me, that saddens me actually, and it's a recurring theme in many ways sometimes with Dave King, is... why does there always have to be animosity when there's a partner in the ways?
Yeah.
Matt Warburton, Davy Weir, man who captained the club
yeah.
to success after success during his period. You're then getting it again with Graham Murty, and you're saying, you know what, Graham Murty, just why are you need to doing that if it's true? You know, I don't get that.
But Mark, he was actually complimentary. He came in, he'd done a decent job, he stabled the ship under difficult circumstances. So that's to be balanced. Uh-huh. You know, it's not just a case of he's trying to put the boot in. He actually says his job's still open and uh-huh. and things, which is fine. But by actually reading the piece, it didn't inspire me as if to say, this guy's done brilliant and we want him back. You know, it kind of suggested that, you know, that it's open for him. The bigger issue for me is that you are actually giving Graham Murty the autonomy to actually go...
multi-million-pound decision.
Mm. £11 million, yeah. Mark. Mm-hmm. And within the article as well, he actually says that it wouldn't have done us any favours in the bank, the £11 million, because we really needed to bring somebody in to replace him effectively, his goals. Now, from that period in January to now, he's scored 4 league goals, so it's not as if it's... Yeah. You know, it's been justified. Well, you're taking that too far, son. But the thing is, it's. But if you look at all the other clubs, as an example, the boy they brought in at Hibs, the centre forward that Lenny's just brought in, he's tearing it up.
McLaren, is it?
No, the other one. Camberry. So they brought him in. Mother will bring in Curtis Main mm-hmm. to replace Moult. Depending on the timing of all this, you could have went and paid an extra £100,000 to get Moult at the beginning of January because you know that there's interest from China.
Yep.
So any one of them could have come in. I know they're just examples. But Mark Allen's been in since last August. So you've got, the best part of 4 months to identify a striker. Because what happens if he gets injured?
Yeah.
You're then going to have to go and replace him. So to suggest that there wasn't someone there with £11 million in the bank Does Disney stack up to me?
It doesn't, but I mean, I always think too, exactly what you've said. In any circumstance, if you're bringing somebody in for £1 million and 6 months later you've got a chance to, you know, let's round it up to 10, make 10 times your money. With all respect, the supporters would understand you do it.
Yeah.
And for me, that should not be a decision that is left with basically an interim manager, albeit it might be made permanent to the end of the season at that time. But it's always as if it's kind of passing the buck, or at the very least, that decision should be taken out of his hands. That's where the managing director comes into his own and said, listen, I know it's no ideal for you because he's a good player. However, we cannot, as a football club...
Can I knock it back?
Because that's what Celtic have done.
Yeah, of course.
Bought low, and Celtic have had the advantage of being in the Champions League, and that's why when Yama and Foster and boys like became 10, 12 million pound players because they were operating at that level. Here's Rangers get the chance to make a 10 million pound profit on a guy, with all respect, when all he's done is score goals against Motherwell and Dundee and Hamilton.
Yes.
You know, and you knock it back. It doesn't make sense to knock things like that back. No. You've got to do it and move on. You know?
No, he's untested, and like you say, untested in Champions League and stuff like that. And you're talking 20 million for Dembele, who's scored goals against Man City, Barcelona. So if it was me, and I'm a Rangers fan, I would take 11 million for Manolas in a minute. I would take 5 million from now. Yeah. And I'd go and get two strikers for 2.5 million each. And the thing is, what Alex's saying about Steven Gerrard, 6 million, is that paying people up, is that included in the £6 million? Because I think he's going to need to.
I don't know if that is or not. The thing that struck me as well, possibly, is there perhaps with the £6 million investment that's coming in, I'm wondering, Alec, because it's Steven Gerrard and everybody, you know, is going bananas about it, it's brilliant, great for Scottish football, great for Rangers, he'll do this, he'll do that. Is there a wee bit of bluff going on, so they're not going to get held to ransom at the moment when they're trying to go and get 3 or 4 in early doors.
Mark, see, the thing is, see, when I knew there was a press conference yesterday called by Dave King, at no point did I actually think whether there was investment that they'll go, do you know what, boys, we've just got 30 million, 40 million. That is naive. I've yet to actually see a football club who actually comes out and tells the world how much money they've got to spend in players. That's not going to happen. So that didn't surprise me. And I'm actually pleased that they put the kind of external investment thing to bed because of the rumours. But what I'm absolutely certain of, and it's only a hunch because I don't know the inside, he will get major investment off this board because it's the only way that he would have taken up this position. He's not a silly guy. He's very switched on, and he wants to have a crack at it. And I know Dave King says that there's no figure, we haven't discussed figures and that, but he would have been given assurances that he will be able to bring in a certain level of player and a certain number, because otherwise you leave yourself short. And if you go back to the Souness era, they brought in about 5 or 6 guys of top class and they complemented guys that were there currently. Yeah.
Ian Durant, Derek Ferguson, Cooper, Ali McCoy, Stevie Cooper, even Stuart Monroe. It was real steady for them at left back. Looking at the squad, Alec, at the moment, who can you see Steven Gerrard and Gary McAllister getting in there and saying, right, you know what, we've got 4 or 5 good boys here that we can go and get a right good tune out of. Who's the kind of 4 or 5, or does he have that many?
Well, listen, I see when you talk about the Souness era, You mentioned guys like Stuart Munro, Cammy Fraser. You know, I was a kid at the time. They were no big names by any stretch of imagination, but they became an integral part of the team. You know, they fitted in, and wee Munro was a regular. So if you bring the right calibre of player in, and one of the things that's been missing for Rangers for a wee while now is leadership on the park. There's nobody the players look to and go, do you know what, I'm going to follow him. There's a lot of young guys as well there. You look at young Doherty as an example. If he had, is it someone of the ilk of Scott Brown, you know he would be guiding him through games. Yeah. So he may well be one that actually gets the benefit of playing against a better player, somebody who's going to take care, a leader. And that has to be throughout the club. You know, Tavernier, I watched him playing at Parkhead about 3 games ago. He was the best player on the park. But again, some people get lost when things are not going well. You're in a dressing room, everybody's looting, there's players getting suspended. So it may well take a leader. People, we've touched upon it in terms of Stoke there. I've been in dressing rooms where there's about 4 or 5 guys and everybody else follows them because they lead by example. Roy Keane was a prime example at Man United. You know, he wasn't the best player by a stretch of imagination, but he was a driving force.
He was a winner.
Well, he's an enforcer, wasn't he? Yeah. And that's exactly what you need. Now, you could look at that young Doherty, Tavernier. If Dorans gets a pre-season under his belt, may well play at the level he is. He's been kind of disappointing, Graham. You know, he's been stop-start injuries, and he hasn't really hit the heights that he would have liked either. So you're looking at these type of guys. If he gets the service into the box, we've spoken about Morelos. You know, what has he got, 19 goals this year already? That's not a bad return for a 21-year-old, Mark. So you would like to think that he could kick on with a bit of support round about him, better service into the box. The one thing about Rangers that I've noticed is, I haven't been at the game at the weekend as well, is they lack tempo. You know, they play about 40 passes and they don't even go to the halfway line and there's no right at them. You know, it's Scottish football, high tempo. Mm-hmm. Rangers just keep pressing, press. If Steven Gerrard can get the tempo in training and then take that into games, then all of a sudden you start overrunning teams and it's just like wave after wave, and then eventually you'll pick after weak link from certain oppositions and then there'll be a lot more. I looked at the weekend and you're thinking, 75 minutes, I left the game because I wanted to beat the traffic, I had something on, and they didn't have a shot on goal. So the thing is, they need that tempo, Mark. But so only when they get recruitments in, you'll then realise the ones that actually start rising.
So who do you think then, Morelos, because he scored 20 goals, so you've got to think you've got to get something.
Doran should out be
of
him,
even if it's just to fatten Morelos up again and get another 10 million offer from him, and go and put that forward. Young Ross McCrory's get plenty of offer, maybe more as a centre mid holder than a centre half. As you say, Greg Doherty, he's got that energy and drive and enthusiasm. Candias, you know, when he fancies it, he can deliver. So you're looking at
little Declan Jones done okay as well. One of the things that they need to bring in terms of is they need to bring a more physical presence to their team. They're very lightweight. Mm-hmm. They all look very similar. You look at the whole midfield.
Wee Holt and all that.
They all look Holt, Dorans, Doherty. You know, I know they've got a wee, but there has to be a physicality about the whoever they recruit as well. Because when you compare them to Celtic, there's a big disparity.
He signed a 4-year contract. How important is it that Rangers now, even if it does, they go to plan? Because let's be honest, despite what kind of investment comes in, it's going to be very difficult to go and win the league next season.
Absolutely.
Over 38 games, right?
Yep.
So how important is it that, you know, that they stick with them and allow a manager to actually go and build? Because we've been hearing for 6 or 7 years, oh, we're starting at the bottom, that size, it'll be a good thing because we can go and clean it up, we can go and do this, we can go and do that, and it's never really materialised. Let Steven Gerrard put a proper strategy in place and go and let him and Gary McAllister go on with it.
Well, listen, you actually have to implement things as well, like you said. First and foremost, his first job is in, come in, identify who they need to go out the door, and then go, who are we going to work with going forward? That's down to Mark Allen to then facilitate getting them out, let Steven Gerrard concentrate, Mark. And see, the thing is, they need to put an infrastructure in, what you said. They might bring in 5 or 6, this 7, whatever it is this year, and then it might be 3, 4 or 5 next year. It can't be 10 every year, 10 out, 10 out, so that otherwise it's just a massive change and you never get any continuity. You look at Celtic, they roughly bring in 2 or 3 a year. Mm-hmm. So that's already there, but Celtic are already down the line with their settled team, if you like. And Rangers need to put a thing in place which will allow them to build, and that doesn't happen overnight. Listen, see if you can bridge the gap, start getting some sort of positivity, sort of decent results against Celtic, then that's the way. It's not going to happen overnight. And I would err of caution, it needs to be cautious. It's not a case of going out and spending 30 million and you turn them
it's
over
not a
one
quick
year.
Fix.
No, absolutely. That's a
you know, it's not a quick fix. Another thing that Rangers supporters, the board, Steven Gerrard and Gary McAllister, they'll be mindful of as well, as you say. You know, Celtic are in a strong position in terms of the team. They've got the squad, the manager, and they've got financial support should they need to tap into it.
Yeah.
And the banks. So Rangers need to be mindful. This is not a quick fix. We've been saying it for a while as well, though, but there's going to have to be patience as well, shown by everybody at Rangers, Simon, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when Rodgers took over at Celtic, I would never ever thought they'd play the football the year after, straight away, that they did, with the same players. I mean, what did he, you talk about 6 million, what did he bring in? Sinclair for 2.5 and Dembele on a free. So it just shows you two quality.
It was about 3.5 million for Sinclair, and it was half a million.
So 4 million quid. Between 4 and 5 that they spent,
And I would never imagine that the players that were there now would be playing the football the way they are now. So it just shows you, as Alex says, if you can get 2 or 3 right good quality, you don't need to go and spend get 10 players and 12 players in. 1 or 2 good players could change that team around. As you say, there's good players there. Dorans can play. Lee, I would get Lee Wallace back straight away. You're saying you need leaders. Lee Wallace is a leader for me.
They need to find two. They need to find, and it's been a problem for Matt Warburton to get right back to the first.
Alves was going to be that leader, wouldn't he? But
partnership, my God, they must. To have any chance, they've got to find a proper partnership.
I watched the boy Bates at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Listen, when he first, and I'll be honest, when I first seen him coming in for Raith Rovers, I thought, oof, he's really raw. Mm-hmm. He was scalping the ball over the place and things. Now, I was watching him, Chris Boyd, because his size, he just holds people off, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, and because like, centre halves are small on him, people can't match him physically. So he's just not, like kind of flicking balls onto wee Brophy and things or Irwin. And so he was bullying the centre halves at the weekend, but he wasn't bullying Bates. And Big Boy, they ended up getting a wee bit frustrated because the big one's like, he's an old-fashioned one when he gets up. He's pointy elbows, his knee, and he's horrible to play against. I can't believe that I've actually allowed this boy to go because he's the only one that can actually match physically. He's got a good turn of pace. He's no bite, you know, bent and bar on the ball. He's a bit raw still, which you can work upon. But see if he'll lose. For me, he's one of the best centre-halves at the club at the moment, and I cannot believe that they've let him go. Or got him tied up sooner.
It's no coincidence that he's not played in the last two Old Firm games and they've got battered. Because he'd done well in the Old Firm games he'd played as well, didn't he, against Big Dembele?
Listen, and he's nicked up with a winning goal at the weekend, you know. And that's one of the problem areas, Mark. And I would suggest it's got to be a minimum of two centre-halves. Yeah. Maybe three, because obviously two's not enough. It just depends. Again, Alves has still got a substantial contract going forward next year. Whether they come up to some sort of compromise or they can ship him out to a warmer climate, tell him it's going to be a really bad winter next year.
Well, Derek McInnes, the Aberdeen manager, has said that, you know, if Rangers don't finish second this season, considering the budget that they've had, the support that they've got every other week at Ibrox, etc., that it would be embarrassing for them. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with what Derek says?
I would agree with that. I had breakfast with Dale on Saturday. He was up at our hotel. He's going to do an interview as well, so there's a wee exclusive. Definitely.
Wait a minute, see before he continues here. Oh, aye, I agree with Dale. I had breakfast with him, by the way, he's doing an interview for us.
He'll be listening now, mate. I need to do this, do you know what I mean? Part of the game, innit? You know that.
Oh, aye. You did a nice, I'll scalp him in a minute.
But I agree, of course they should. I mean, the players that Rangers have got compared to Aberdeen players, I don't think you look at the Aberdeen squad, there's no player that's played at a good level down south, or you look at Rangers squad, there's guys that have played in the Premier League, won the championship down there. Of course
won
they should
the
be should be finishing second. Should be challenging, certainly with the wage budget they've got.
Absolutely.
And if Dale finishes above this Rangers team now, that'll be his greatest achievement at Aberdeen, I think. Mm-hmm. To finish second with the group that he's got to finish above this Rangers squad, I would say so.
I think when you looked at the summer recruitment, Alec, or certainly the budget that the Rangers board provided to Pedro Caixinha, in hindsight, he should have got the bullet after the loss to the Luxembourg team, but they stood by him. And I know there's been turmoil at the club, but when you look at that budget, it must be a sore one, particularly for the Rangers board, if they don't finish second, considering what they've ploughed in financially.
When you look at the recruitment last summer, about how scattergun it was, there was no due diligence, you were just putting it right on a manager, which contradicts what they actually brought the director of football in. It was supposed to alleviate these problems that may well arise. And by the way, that hasn't quite turned the corner yet because all these guys are still at the club.
Yeah.
You know, so there's still a hangover for that to pick up. In terms of Dale, I think you could have used different words. I think it was mind games with Dale going into the game tonight to try and rile people up or try and get under people's skins. It's just, you hear it from managers all the time. Yeah. Because if he loses tonight and he day finish second, they might come back to bite him. But I suppose that's one of the reasons why you're trying to put them out there to rile people. So the Rangers' finances should dictate that they finish second because of the mess in which has happened with the Caixinha episode. I think the fact that Rangers are still in the mix to get second, you know, gives them an opportunity to try and get the goals in which they tried to achieve at the start of the season. But I think it just shows you the importance of beating all the smaller teams within the league.
Yeah.
When you look at the top, you know, Rangers and Celtic, Aberdeen haven't laid a glove on them this year. Mm. Yet the importance of beating the smaller teams, and I think that's one of the Rangers' Achilles heels. So
particularly at home, Matt, the record
is, I was going to swear there, but I know it's a family programme, but it's been piss poor. and again, that goes back to us. I was with Ian Durant a couple of Saturdays ago, just talking about it, and he went, you've got to be able to, the weight of the badge, you've got to be able to play in front of the fans, and they haven't been able to do it. And again, it goes back to the actual lack of tempo and intensity that the team play at. Mm. And that goes back to the Warburton days, where it was all pass, 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 and everybody goes, ah, but the possession's great. But you're saying it's not good. You need to have an intensity at Rangers, and you have to, because with the greatest respect to most people in the league, Rangers have got players that are, we've just touched upon it in terms of the level that they've played at. They should be beaten a lot of these teams with considerable less budgets, but they haven't been able to do it. So that goes back to, again, to the mentality, the kind of the weight and the pressure of playing for Rangers. They've got two away games now, which are going to be extremely difficult. So it's all to play for. And again, it goes back to your point about the importance of the split. It's brilliant. You know what I mean? It's great for, because we're really just talking about second and third tier.
Mm-hmm.
It's not brilliant for a challenge at the top of the league. You know, your showcase and things. And I don't want to go back to that. For me, if you've not got a league that's actually kind of competing at the top, it doesn't really excite me as much as the second, course, third, fourth, yeah, places, mm-hmm, and the relegation places. Your league is defined by your challenge at the top of the league.
Is it harder to play at Rangers? You obviously know you played with Sunderland and Wolves, but is it harder to go and play for Rangers at home than these sort of teams?
I've got to be honest with you, I didn't find it any... I understood the magnitude when guys like Mark Guidi are writing columns and you've just lost or drew to Kilmarnock or something, and you're getting scalped all the place. And every time you see Squeedy, you think, I can't wait to retire to volley him at five sides. But that's the scrutiny. Uh-huh. You know, you get your pundits, you get your ex-players coming in. I'm sitting here doing a thing now and saying, you need to be able to step up to the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual scrutiny, but that has been devalued, Simon, purely for the point of view is, when I was playing against Celtic and vice versa, when you played a game this Saturday, you thought, this is a great opportunity to put pressure on Celtic, who play away at Hearts and Water, and vice versa. Yeah. So there's a pressure there. Uh-huh. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of the pressure of the thing, mate. Celtic have had an absolute canter in the last 7 years. An absolute canter. You know, you look at the Celtic's performances, this is probably a normal season for even Ronnie Dyler. I think that would be roughly, yep, you know, the points have dropped in recent months.
Yeah.
This is just a normal season. You know, you're saying that Brendan Rodgers, he's improved all these guys. But for all the guys, you'd have to say McGregor's improved. Has Tierney improved from last year? I think probably no playing at the same level. Has Dembele done as well last year? No. Has Griffiths done well? No. Sinclair? No. Forrest? Yes. So there's, mm-hmm, I think there's players, Beaton since he came in? No. So there's
another thing as well that you mentioned in terms of the importance for Rangers too is Brownen and Cham have really built a partnership, and Brown's been terrific for Young and Cham. And you think £4.5 million, 21 years old or whatever, the two of them in the middle of the park dictate games, don't they?
Mark, I said last week on radio with yourself, Radio Clyde, that I felt as if Cham was the best player in Scotland. I still maintain that. He's been the best player. There's no two ways about it. He's a guy that actually dictates things. Mm-hmm. Bruni breaks things up, but he's a boy that actually dictates things. He's 21. And the actual progress from the start of the season to now, mm-hmm, is day and night. Everybody's going, £4.5 million. What's he doing? You know, at the beginning.
Yeah.
You look at him now, he's got eight or nine goals this season as well. Now, that's not a bad return. Yeah. Did you ever get that from midfielder, wee man? Eh?
Six I got.
Oh, well done.
That's all right, six.
Now.
I never passed it. I never touched it. I just scored six.
But there you go. So this is the point. You know, the thing is, this boy's actually starting coming of age. Mm-hmm. And but you're right. But They just have so many players that can change the match coming off the bench as well, which is actually a big bonus for Celtic. But you know, Rangers really need to first and foremost dig in tonight at Aberdeen, and it'll be really interesting to see where it pans out, because going to Easter Road, because they've been probably had the advantage over Rangers this year. Mark, you look at the two games at Ibrox, which they won, and then I think, if my memory serves me right, the game at Easter Road that Rangers won 2-1. Hibs were brilliant on the night, and Rangers were a wee bit more resolute and managed to get a positive result.
Big summer for Celtic as well. I mean, what, Armstrong could go, Boyata, Lustig, I think Rodgers. They'll need to get a new right back. Rodgers could go. So it's a big summer for Celtic as well.
Some interest in Callum McGregor, by all accounts, too. Yeah. Yep, certainly interest. We'll see what happens. We've got a couple of minutes left on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill, Alec Ray, Simon Ferry, and myself, Mark Weedy. Let's finish off. Dundee, your old club, Simon, your old club as well, Alec, they've avoided the drop. They've got the result that makes sure that they are in the Premiership next season. The gaffer, Neil McCann, said that they don't want to be celebrating avoiding relegation. Briefly, you see where he's coming from with that?
Definitely. I mean, I think, again, talking on budgets, I think Dundee have got one of the better budgets in the league. So I don't think they should be celebrating relegation. We finished top six, and I think their budget's got a lot better since I was there. So I think it's been
like
a poor.
I think so.
After they paid me up. After they paid me up.
You're not another one to get paid up. No wonder the club's a mess.
Why do I'm so happy all the time?
a tracksuit and a trans cap.
I went and bought a micro actually off the player. But Dundee should be finishing top six, I think. When you see Kilmarnock, Steve Clark, a much lesser budget.
That's right.
Dundee should be close. They weren't even close to finishing the top six, Dundee. It's been a season of fighting relegation the full season. And I think he'll get rid of a lot of players, Neil McCann, in the summer.
You could avoid the drop with one or two games to go. And
Mark, I have to be honest with you. I got relegated with Sunderland and 40 points in the Premiership. You know, you look at it at the moment, it's 33 at the moment, so it went right to the wire, and we got relegated. So I was devastated. And then one season we got relegated with Millwall. So I never quite got that end of season. So I get the understanding why people are the relief and things. You know, you see some of the ones like Rochdale at the weekend. You know, they were playing Charlton, managed to, and you know, right up to the death, and they managed to kind of just stay up. I get the relief, and it gives the manager an opportunity to build in that level again. So I get it that people want to celebrate. It depends on what your aspirations are. You know, Rochdale would be thing me, but as Simon just said there now, Dundee, you would have to say they're kind of run about the 6th, 7th, run about that, because of the type of player that they've actually been able to attract. It's been a disappointing season that they're having to wait till last weekend and Hamill missed a penalty. It's all under the bridge, but what I'm trying to say is they shouldn't really be in that position. You know, they should have been fighting to try and nick that 6th spot. He's right when he says Simon Kilmarnock can do it. You know the budget's higher, but it gives Neil McCann an opportunity to start building now, a week or so before the end of the season, to then go. Their biggest problem this season has been goal scoring. They've not had anybody that's been prolific. You know, they've had Haber, they've had the big boy Musa, who's pitched in with a couple of important goals of late, but if you look back, you know, over the course of the season, he's not contributed anywhere near what you'd expect to try and get them into that 6th spot. So
Simon Murray's not really done it since he's went.
He's still got a lot of he's raw. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still learning, and he may well develop, young Simon. But it's a case of back to the drawing board in terms of, because they need to do better. There was times at the season that Dundee's home record was really poor this year as well. Mm-hmm. So that's something they're going to have to improve on.
Right, brilliant. We have had 48, 49 minutes on the Open Goal podcast. It's been absolutely terrific. Alec will catch the last 2 or 3 minutes of his sunbed.
Faz is waiting for him.
And Simon's going to go and get himself ready. He's got the big playoff against Steny. Coming up, the big one. So we wish Simon all the best.
Cheers, lads. Thanks very much.
And that we hope that he does get up, because if he doesn't, every chance he'll get freed, and he'll be looking to work with Open
Goal. Jimmy Mack
promises he wasn't going to give you one. Oh, you've got one.
He might have to break into his Dundee payoff 10 years ago.
Oh, that's gone, mate. That's gone.
So thanks very much again for joining us. I'm sure you've enjoyed the past 48, 49 minutes as much as we have. We've been the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Thanks to Alec Ray and to Simon Ferry, and to me, Mark Guidi. Enjoy the rest of your week.